Choice and Control, a podcast celebrating people with disability. In this season, we're talking about access, inclusion, and the National Disability Insurance Scheme. This podcast series is brought to you by Carers Queensland, NDIS local area coordination partner in the community.
G'day, I'm Jodie van der Wettering. Today we're talking to Des Ryan, the recently elected chair of Queenslanders with Disability Network and a powerful advocate for employment for people with disability. He organises the Rockhampton region's Accessible Pub Crawl, which we're going to find out about a little later, and he's working on Community Solutions' Regional Advantage Project, building employment options for people with disability by working on the employers and shining a light on the economic benefits of an inclusive workforce.
The one stark thing that stood out over the time was that statistics of people with disabilities taking up employment, not so much taking up employment, but being able to gain employment, is flatlining. Has it changed radically? If anything, it's not quite as good as it was way back. And I realised it's no good, you know, going back in the same old hole. It doesn't work. People with disabilities have still got the same inclination to work as they always did. So the problem isn't with people with disabilities wanting to get involved with work. The problem is the other parts of it. The employer is equally important, and also you've got to have the funding. So the NDIS is going to be there. So you've got two parts of the cog, haven't you? You've got people with disabilities that are still the same. They're not any different. As a matter of fact, they must be a lot better motivated in a way, because in these days, with all these social changes that have happened, kids with disabilities are going to school for a lot longer, and they're going mainstreaming. They've got expectations.
And like you said, but the motivation is one thing, but there also has to actually be a job there and an employer willing to give you that job.
Yeah. So, and we don't celebrate employers who do that. And I thought a group of high-level employers or people with high respect, a level of high respect in the business community who are out there and trying to motivate people could have some good effect. But they'd have to be people that people would listen to them. And because as part of the other research I did, I looked at the myths that there've been plenty of inquiries into this problem. And there's a group of myths that people with disabilities are more prone to sickness, so that they don't turn up for work. They're unreliable, that they don't stay in the job for long because of ill health, they can't achieve at work, and that the cost of business modifications. Now, when we looked at that, all those were either reversed or the same as the ordinary employee without a disability. The main thing that stood out, the really key improvement you get with people with disabilities, is that they don't roll over into other jobs frequently. They don't change jobs. When they've got a job, they frequently stay there. Well, I've been working at Community Solutions for 22 years, so I'm the perfect example, you know. Once you find a good niche, you know, it fits your lifestyle, you stay there and you feel valued and you enjoy the role. A lot of things have got to happen to make that really successful more often than not, and that is the employer's got to get involved. He's got to possibly tailor a work role, set up the environment, the immediate environment around the employee. So through that first part, which is the hardest part, it's not just for people with disabilities, it's all people. We've had some keen interest from employers, but they've got to be switched on. We're also working with other employer groups, like we're working with the big hitters like the university, the Rockhampton Regional Council, and trying to change their HR policies. And time will tell whether it has an effect. But once you get an employer, he can frequently come back to us, you know, with looking for employees. There's certain tasks that are regulated, that routine, there's a cohort of people in a general sense that will fit the bill. They'll turn up for work, do a routine job, and keep turning up and keep doing the job that most people would find maybe mundane and too boring, and they don't turn up for work. Now, they're all keen for the job. They need that. That money's more vital in their life. So this is happening, you know, that's starting to happen.
As well as working with local employers to get more people with disability into the workforce, there's also an element of finding out where people are already hitting goals and celebrating their successes.
Because I'd run into one of them at the nursing home when I was visiting my mother. I went in one day and this lady was there in the kitchen And not only was she great with the clients who've all got dementia, she had them all standing around the outside of the closed off area where she was washing up. They were wiping up for this group of ladies, and it was like a social activity. And I just felt so great because mum's up there and enjoying herself and having a social activity about something that people do every day in their normal life, wash and wipe up. And normally the staff there aren't like that. They don't involve the clients in what. So the what was just a mundane job was a really social activity for the people. And they were all either standing around or chatting in some way. And she said, I just got a letter from Mercy Care today to say I'll be made permanent. And I thought, this is fabulous. And at the time, the next day, I was so pleased. I thought, I'll ring up the CEO and tell him how great an employee they've got. And it's great that he's picked up someone who's so good at what she does. So I did, you know, because I believe that passing on recommendations about good performance is really important in life, you know. Everyone needs it, a pat on the back. There was a young girl in Yeppoon working at childcare centre, and she was just a star in that place, you know, with kids. And most people would think someone with an intellectual disability couldn't work with kids, but she had a certificate, she had done all that, and the kids just loved her, you know. And she was rolling up to work every day with a smile on her face. She had a job and she loved her job. So we were blown away by some of the people who are already on the ground doing this.
And you think, you mentioned when you were first setting this up, you looked at the myths about what would be the challenges employing a person with disability. Do you think making that one-on-one connection with the employers and explaining some of the truths there, it's starting to break down those misconceptions?
Well, we have so, and we've managed to get some funding to, so we created these videos of successful employers. So we equally focus on the employee, but also the employer. And I mean, unless we make a star of the employer, it's going to be hard to make inroads with the other employees, because we want to motivate the other employees saying, well, look around, I see this other person. It's not just about making them feel good, it's about them realising I can employ someone with a disability and make a dollar at the same time. And that's what David French said at one of his presentations, and it was very interesting that he said, you know, we're not a charity. Even though he's motivated, you know, himself, he also had to make a dollar at what he... So this employee's got to be successful. And she is very successful for him. More successful than what he initially thought, you know. And as he said, he would make a permanent full-time, but she's very busy doing other things, you know, with horse riding for the disabled and doing this and... But the minute she's available, he'll have a full-time and full salary, you know, full award wage. And that's what Kangabins are doing. They're offering full award wages for employees, because they move something like a million product lines a week out of there, because they're on that. They've got 9 sites. They've got this collecting all these bottles and that. It's growing into a massive business. And they need people to turn up all the time and do a routine task to count this. And they've got, and they're willing to pay, you know, award wages.
You mentioned you've been working with Community Solutions 20 years and change. What's your own employment history like this?
Well, I started there as their IT person. And I did that for nearly 18 years. But then we amalgamated with Community Solutions, because we were called CQ Personal Services. So we were this larger organisation with 8 sites, and they were all logging into our NT servers at work. And I was doing it part-time, because I had really good relationships with our providers, our suppliers. And I organised the work so I could just, you know, monitor it and do the... Basically, I could manage it through... Most of the work I did really was getting people to reboot their computer, reset the passwords.
It off and on again?
And not only that, stayed away from programs and business applications that would crash the system, you know. The trouble is, people expect it all to work. And without NBN, I mean, that is probably the greater disaster, the NBN. because a really good NBN would have made a lot of these software applications work better. So then I moved, I was doing complaints for Endeavour and Community Solutions. And I loved working for Endeavour with their complaint system because they went at it at a very regimented level, which I respected, and I learned a lot. And then there was another refocus of the business, so I stepped back doing the complaints for Community Solutions. That's when this regional advantage, I was doing for about a year and a half, I did a lot of desktop audits on all service providers Australia-wide, looking at what the implications of the NDIS was on the original sites, you know, where they implemented the NDIS in Melbourne first. And then I went back and redid the same thing again after a year. All those, you know, New South Wales, Queensland, and wrote up the businesses that were providing services. And you can see that what was happening with the NDIS. Businesses were coming and going. Some businesses were just completely moving away from the service they were providing before. Some businesses just amalgamated, like in Tasmania, Uniting Care amalgamated with Uniting Care Victoria. In one fell swoop, they created a massive business. Imagine if they did that up the east coast of Australia. So the options were, you know, things could be very fluid. You know, if you didn't get your financials in order, you could quickly go out of business and lose a lot of money. So this was really key to making this work for our business too, and making it work. And and I mean, to be honest, it wasn't a great cost to us because I was only working 12 hours a week, you know, and I enjoyed it. And who wouldn't go into a lot of meetings and lunches and dinners? You know, it was a feel-good job.
Fantastic.
You know?
Yeah. Getting into that IT role in the first place, was that challenging?
Well, it was, but I mean, I come from a level where I wasn't working, so it was so interesting. I started studying first because I used to play chess at the TAFE college. I realised it wasn't accessible. There was no wheelchair accessible cabs originally, so that was out. Once they become available, I decided to... I was secretary of Capricorn Respite Care, and I needed to automate mail-outs. So I wanted to learn some more about Microsoft Office or something. So I started doing some programs, and I was in the chess club with these guys who were vying with the same, with CQ champions. About three of us all had the role at one time or other when we were successful. And one day I borrowed a book, and one of my mates said to me, oh, handed it back to him in a few weeks, and he said, that is 6 months of our course. Oh, so that encouraged me to just do it. So I enrolled at TAFE, and then within 3 years, I think, 4 years, doing a diploma of computing, business computing, I was getting work. CommAssist Computer Solutions rang me, out of the blue to me. And I don't know who or how, but they heard that I was interested in doing access programming with Microsoft Access. They had an application, they had someone working on a project, and he was out of his depth. So my first two jobs were for Dobbins and Springworks as a consultant, and they were paying the business, and they were paying me. And I was getting good money. Incredibly good money. And I was, I just couldn't believe. One day I was sitting on the floor over there at Dobbinson's. It was about 40 degrees in the shade, and this furnace was going. But what was most interesting to me was we weren't talking about disability, we were talking about the layout of these springs that they sell springs all around the world. Dobbinson's, it's a massive business. And it was sort of a massive moment for me to think, wow, here I am, not talking about disability, where it's work, you know, that's really important. And then I started, I got a contract with, not a contract, they tapped me on the shoulder. It was a legal service in Brisbane, in Rockhampton. So I did a database for them, and they graciously let me keep the copyright. because I sort of stipulated that too, but you know, it's only you can push that so far. And so I kept the copyright. So I finished up selling that to 23 legal services around Queensland, every legal service. And I had a fabulous life. One day I went to work and my boss, we'd had a bit of a turn down, and he sat down and said, "We've got to have a meeting there." So yeah, look, we're asking everyone to take a cut in their hours. Oh, I was so glad because I just signed up this big site with 5 sites, you know. I was going, oh, he was so relieved I was, you know, we're not taking the news so quick, so easily, you know, but it was so good. I was earning more from my private job than my day job, you know.
Outside of the day job, Des also organises the Accessible Pub Crawl. It's what it sounds like. Once a year, COVID permitting, a group of people get together to suss out Central Queensland's nightlife. It includes people with disability, people working in the disability and health sector, and local community leaders. Just get a better feel for just how accessibility is working on the ground in practice.
Basically, I've done it so many times, I'm thinking, oh, that's the last one. But then people ring me, when are we doing the pub crawl? Because it's such a good night. So now I get everyone to put in $10. We choose up to 4 hotels. If I get enough people, there's enough money to have nibblies at all those hotels lined up, prepaid for. And you mix with a group of business people, you mix with a group of nurses or doctors. Or what we do is we pick the people and we say, you're blind, you've got to go up to the bar and order a drink. Here's a scarf. You're in a wheelchair, you've got to go to the toilet and report back. You know, when we get outside, we have these lists of tasks, and some of the questions are things like, what were the staff like? Because if the staff are really good, it's nearly as important as accessibility. They will make it work, the staff, as much as they can, you know.
That attitude makes such a difference of finding, absolutely, how can we make this, yes, work, rather than, well, this is hard, it can't,
yeah,
be done.
Yeah. We've had some great experiences, and doing that, and you mix, because, and I meet group of people with disabilities at times that I might mix with before, and sometimes it's highly entertaining. I remember we had the federal member come along, and she stayed the whole night, and when one of our persons with disability got talking to her, and he could talk the leg off a wooden horse, you know, and he was with her, and I'm sure she was like, wow, you know. But after talking to him for about 5 minutes, she could see she was really enjoyed herself and was taking part, and he was such a gregarious, entertaining character. So it forces people to mix, you know, and I give Michelle Landry good credit because she stayed the whole night and took part, and you know, it gets people out of their, and you know, out of their normal mode of operating socially. They get a bit of a idea of what we're trying to achieve, you know.
And how good that you have a nice, fun social outing, no one feels threatened, but at the same time, all these business people and politicians and decision makers get to witness firsthand some of the challenges when a venue isn't accessible.
They might be in a wheelchair. We might put them in a wheelchair and say, you do this and you do that, you know. And we review it outside. And so at the end of the night, we've got a table of scores. So then I'll go back to the venue and say, look, you scored high on this, you scored high on that, or toilets are bad. It's not just that, it's also about the noise level. Because what we found when we did our first pub crawl, we had a blind person with us. We thought the accessibility was quite good. He wasn't happy at all. He said I was sitting at home, he said, because I couldn't hear anyone. I couldn't see anyone, of course. Might as well have been at home talking to himself. He couldn't hear anyone, you know. Yeah, that's a really key thing, you know. So you realise people have got to blend all those things together, you know.
Because it's not just about people who use wheelchairs. There's also vision impairment, sensory processing problems. There's such a wide scope of things that disability can... Yeah. How do you go with the venues? Do the venues see you coming in being like, here they come, or are they up for it?
Well, they love it. 40 people come along buying drinks, and they buy their own drinks, of course. One of the first pub calls we did, we had this blind guy come along. He had to go up and order a drink at the bar. So he had a white cane, so he went up to the bar. We're sitting watching him. And of course, when he was there at the bar, someone jumped in front of him, not realising he was blind. And of course, Jim thought it was someone from our group, having a bit of a dig at him. So he got his white cane and he slocked this guy across the legs half a dozen times. We just absolutely lost it. It was so funny. He didn't do it in a bad way, you know, but and the guys looked at him like, this guy's out of his tree, you know. It was so hysterical at night, you know. And they realised, because people wearing scarves around their eyes, you know, it was obvious that they weren't always as disabled as they were making out, you know. Yeah.
Has the pub crawl itself and the feedback to the venues there seen any changes?
I'm not sure, but they're all keen to hear if we've got issues. Well, they're in the business of making money. And
yeah,
their way to make money is attract the widest group of clients that you can.
That's true. Nobody deliberately wants to exclude people with disability.
Yeah.
It's just maybe they don't know how to, or they think it's going to mean really expensive building mods, and they just don't know how to get started.
Like one hotel we went to, they had accessible toilet, beautiful accessible toilet. Unfortunately, they'd stacked it up full of toiletries. You couldn't use it. Next year we went back. When we went there, the toilet was shut because someone had and blocked the toilet, so they weren't opening it until they got their guys who were going to come on a maintenance contract to fix it, which would have been another month.
And a month thought, to get a loo fixed?
And you think, are you joking me? Leave the toilet closed for a month? Some people, you can't get through to them.
While most venues are interested to see what feedback they get from the accessible pub crawl, Des says sometimes some places take a bit more work. And when that's the case, it's not just a matter of picking your battles, but picking your strategy as well.
We noticed one particular hotel venue was the worst. They didn't have an accessible toilet on the ground floor. You'd have to catch a lift upstairs and the rooms weren't that really accessible, a bit of a step. And they're always going to put in a wheelchair accessible toilet in, but they never ever did it. You could see there was no management push for it. Of course, you know, 75% of most licences are owned by either Woolworths or Coles. So I dug around, found the email of the chairman of West Farmers, who was the overarching body, wrote to him and say, you know, as a person with a disability, I find it, you know, terrible to see that this business it's associated with your company, is providing possibly the worst accessibility in town when it comes to the patrons. It's not good you're associated with it, because the best accessibility that we found in a pub in Rockhampton was Allenstown Hotel, which is associated with your competitor. So that morning of the pub call, I got an email from the chairman of West Farm to say, it will be done. It might take 6 months, but it will be done. Provide you hold off from the pub listing. I said, absolutely. That's not our preferred option anyway, you know.
Good. And that's interesting, that strategy, that rather than having a picket out the front an angry letter to the paper, you go to where the money is or where the sort of big decision makers are and sort of work strategically about the change you want to see.
People respect for their brand name and they don't want to lose that respect. There are other ways to skin a cat, you know. There's a need for the Anti-Discrimination Commission, but softly, I feel, find is a good way to go first.
Thanks for joining us at Choice and Control, a Carers Queensland podcast. For more information about Carers Queensland, the National Disability Insurance Scheme, or the Local Area Coordination Program, please contact us online at carersqld.com.au. Or you can catch up with us on Facebook, search for Carers Queensland NDIS. This podcast is a place for people with disability to share experiences, stories, and achievements. If you have a story you think we should know about, please contact us through the Carers Queensland Inquiries line at 1300 999 636 or email cq.inquiries@ndis.gov.au. Until next time, thanks for listening.